ask you to indulge me in telling you a story from my own life about rainbows and covenants. Tom and I were about to get married, and we wanted to write our own vows, that mutual pledge that would be at the heart of our ceremony and our shared life. But our days persisted in being so hectic that we weren't finding the time to do this deep dialogue and to bring it the concentration that it was called for to accomplish this important piece of creative work. So just a couple of weeks before our wedding, we decided to make a brief getaway to a bed and breakfast in the little mountain town of Jim Thorpe, nestled high in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania. We lived in Philadelphia at the time. The town of Jim Thorpe is famous for its spectacular mountain landscape. And it was late September, and so added to the dramatic landscape were the autumn colors and the falling leaves in the rainy, misty weather. So we did the good work that we needed to do. We finished up the words of our covenant, our vows that we would say to one another. We finished up the afternoon of our second day there. And as we began to descend out of the mountains, feeling very happy and very satisfied by the good communication that we'd had, by the process we'd completed, we were feeling very full of hope for the step we were about to take together. And just then, the clouds broke open like a Michelangelo painting, and right before us, set into that vast, sun-clad, misty mountain landscape, was a great double rainbow that extended from one horizon to the other. And it was so stunning that we pulled over the car and got out to gaze in wonder. It was an impossibly miraculous synchronicity, and yet there it was. We felt as if the forces of nature had gathered together to conjure up this mystic sign, the sign of the great cosmic promise, as a gift of blessing for us and for our promise. How is that for a delusion of grandeur? Well, it's easy to go forward in faith when the wind is at your back and the sky is giving you auspicious signs. And we need to embrace these moments of knowing, these moments of certainty and fullness of bliss when they come. Because the walk of faith and faithfulness is actually very difficult. It's often very obscure and uncertain. It takes us deep into wildernesses of confusion and unknowing. At times it requires patience far beyond what we believe we can endure. Sometimes it forces us to relinquish all our expectations or to leave behind all our familiar frameworks. Sometimes we are asked to undertake the hardest of sacrifices or to accept losses that we could not have possibly imagined when we began, including relinquishing our cherished beliefs about ourselves or about the world. Gerald May is the author of a book titled The Dark Night of the Soul, a psychologist explores the connection between darkness and spiritual growth. And in this book, he writes, "If we were honest, I think we would have to admit that we will likely try to sabotage the movement toward our true freedom. If we really knew what we were called to relinquish in this journey, our defenses would never allow us to take the first step. Sometimes the only way we can enter the deeper dimensions of the journey is by being unable to see where we are going. In worldly matters, it is good to have a light so that we know where to go without stumbling. But in spiritual matters, it is precisely when we think we know where to go that we are most likely to stumble. Thus, St. John of the Cross says," and this continues to be Gerald May, "St. John of the Cross says, 'God darkens our awareness in order to keep us safe. When we cannot chart our own course, we become vulnerable to another order of guidance, and the darkness becomes a guiding night more kindly than the dawn.'" So the journey of faith necessarily has these passages, often very long passages, in which we do not know where we are going, or how we will get there, or even what there will be. We just don't know, and that's part of it. In fact, that's probably most of it. The journey of faith is the willingness to keep going, to keep trusting the process, to keep walking forward toward the light of one's ideal, even if at times we cannot see or feel that light, even if we question whether it is real or ever has been. And if our ideal turns out to be false, well, then the journey of faith allows us to learn that truth and to reorient ourselves to a truer light. The rainbow with its gossamer light-filled colors is the rare sign that reminds us that there is a luminous gift in walking the path of faith and faithfulness, a gift that comes with time. It may not be the gift that we wanted or thought that we wanted. It may not be the leprechaun's pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, for after all, leprechauns are misers and tricksters. It's a gift that comes as our preconceptions and our attachments fall away. It's the gift of soulful transformation, of becoming larger than we were. It's the blooming of the heart and mind as we give ourselves to trust. If we can persevere through the difficult times and simply keep going forward, willing to open ourselves in love and wisdom. One of my most favorite poems from Rilke says this. And again, there's me talking about God, so translate as you need. God speaks to each of us as God makes us, and then walks with us, silently out of the night. These are the words we dimly hear. You sent out beyond your recall, go to the limits of your longing. Embody me. Flare up like a flame and make big shadows I can move in. Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final. Don't let yourself lose me. Nearby is the country they call life. You will know it by its seriousness. Give me your hand. These lines, don't let yourself lose me and give me your hand, they speak to the quality of faithfulness which is at the heart of covenant. This year, as we investigated Bible stories, we began with the story of Noah in Genesis. And this is, in this very early story, the idea of covenant makes its first appearance in the long arc of the Bible. And it's in this Genesis story that the rainbow and the covenant become linked as ideas. As images. After the flood which destroyed the world, God sets a rainbow in the sky in this story, in this myth. God sets a rainbow in the sky as a sign of a promise that he will never do this terrible thing again. And no matter how hard it gets, or how frustrating the world becomes, or how difficult human beings may be, he will not give up on the relationship. Throughout the Bible, a key idea that appears again and again is the idea of chesed. It has no direct translation into English, but it carries the meaning of steadfast love, of loving and merciful kindness. And it has a subtle connotation in that chesed is not just random kindness, such as the kindness expressed to a stranger whom one encounters in passing. Chesed is a particular quality of faithful and loyal love. It speaks to the relationship between parties who are somehow connected to each other in some kind of promise, in a covenant, or in a troth. In the Hebrew Bible, chesed is considered one of the primary qualities of the divine, the loving commitment that does not give up, that does not break, that does not turn away. As a holy quality, chesed is therefore a human ideal, a value to be practiced between people in community. Well, this journey in ministry has been an extraordinary life lesson for me in the meaning of covenant. I have learned the meaning of holding to one's promise, to one's promises, of holding others in my heart and mind and concern as I have promised to do, of doing what is called for even when it is incredibly difficult, and of the joy and exhilaration of walking forward together with others in a context of promise, the promise to each other and to a greater world. I have also learned how covenants fail, how they break or can be wounded. And to state this more personally, I have had to face my own painful and shameful failures to honor my commitments at times. And I have experienced the pain of being forsaken by others who have turned away from me or from the promise that our relationship held. It is the purpose of covenant to call people into relationship and back into commitment, expressly because we are deeply flawed, inconsistent, distractible. We can sometimes be lazy, oblivious, or lacking in courage. We are sometimes selfish, or at the very least, self-absorbed and self-centered. We get angry, we can injure, and be injured. Covenants do not require us to be perfect. If we could be perfect, we wouldn't need them. And if they demanded perfection, well, then we should just pack it up and go home and spend Sunday morning reading the paper. We enter into covenant knowing that we will sometimes fail each other. What matters is what happens next, after we have failed. The covenant becomes truly real, truly active, at that moment when we have failed, and yet we come back, recommit to what we care about, work it out, and start again. To be part of a congregation of faith is to be part of a covenant. Not only the covenant that joins members together in a unique community, but also the great promise. To be part of the great promise, the transcendent covenant of all life and all humanity that calls us toward ever-deepening connection, mutual responsibility, and ever-fuller realization and wholeness. So the covenant in faith community is a microcosmic expression of that larger, transcendent covenant. And again, to be part of a covenant is not about being perfect, not at all. It does not ask us, does not require us to be perfect. The nature of covenant is that it is compassionate, forgiving, flexible, expansive. And yet it embraces us, and it holds us to accountability. So it creates a context in which we all grow and stumble and gradually awaken toward our bigger selves. Covenant asks us simply to care, to try, to keep with it, to show up in the spirit of goodwill, to risk occasionally, to own our share. Personally, I also feel that covenants are binding if we let them be. The Sufis would say that such commitments have implications on the inner planes. And thus we must take these promises seriously. We have to recognize that they have a deep effect upon our own spiritual, psychological, and emotional lives, and on those people with whom we are in covenant. If we walk away from a covenant, if we break it without giving it thought, it lingers in that inner world as something unfinished. The vows I took when I accepted ordination into the Unitarian Universalist ministry are still and will always be active in me because they were promises of the highest order. They were my promises to God, to my fellow citizens of earth, to my most profound ideals. Taking off the mantle of parish ministry in this setting doesn't dissolve those larger commitments, which will stay with me throughout my life. Because I believe that my covenant with Theodore Parker Church is spiritually binding, this is also why I wished there to be a formal release from it. As painful as it may be, it is a way of honoring the seriousness of it. When I was on sabbatical, I was released for several months from all operations of the church and from pastoral and preaching work. And I traveled to a wild little island off the coast of Scotland. And I was walking out there with the billowing sky, the great clouds, and the bright sea and the rocky cliffs, and the only sounds were the wind in the grasses and the little lambs crying for their mothers and the occasional twittering bird. But even out there, separated from you and from the world of Theodore Parker Church by thousands of miles and weeks of restful sabbatical, I nevertheless felt the subtle bond that connected me here to this community, to this ministry, to this covenant. I was still yours, and you were still mine. And though this community will never leave my heart, my time of this particular kind of service and commitment must come to an end, and a certain kind of bond must be untied in order for both you and I to be free to move forward. This is a big relinquishment for all of us, most certainly for me. We are all going to enter into the in-between time that John O'Donohue describes, the time of feeling uprooted and unmoored, a time of unknowing, when the old is not old enough to have died away and the new is too young to have been born. On Monday morning, just this past week, after our celebration last Sunday, I woke up so bewildered. All day I stumbled about, bumping into things. I didn't know who I was or what to do. Ah, I thought, I'm entering into that time. That time of liminality, of sacred nothingness, that is how it must be. It is at such times of total unknowing that faith and walking forward in faith and faithfulness is most relevant, most necessary, and most fruitful. It's by giving loving attention to this tender time that you will become pregnant with your future selves, and in time you will know, you will see what you are called next to do and to be. Take one another's hand. Actually, not yet. That was a metaphor. At that moment, it was a metaphor, but in a moment, we will make it concrete. So please stand and make a circle around the pews as we have done at other times.
Thank you.